It's all about the colour black today on Movie Wallace, as we review Black Sea, Black or White, and Black Hat. It's time for Movie Wallace. Hi, this is Joe.
Hi, it's Rashmi.
And Yazdi as well.
Movie Wallace is your weekly dose of film reviews, movie news and general banter in theatres, on DVD, online streaming or in the back of an airplane. If you love the movies, this show is for you. This could be our very first all-black podcast.
What are the chances of three movies coming out at the same time with the word black in them?
It's true.
Yes.
It's the marketing guys. They're clearly like, quick, let's put the movie out while the good movie, The Black, in the title is out there and somebody's going to go see the wrong film. I wonder how many people have gone to see the wrong film.
Yeah.
It's like, I'm going to go see Black Hat
with Chris
Hemming.
Either that one with Black in it.
And then end up seeing something completely different. Maybe not. Anyway, so we had some good fun this weekend. We went to see the Oscar-nominated shorts. We saw the short animated movies and the short live actions.
And please, please, please look in your local listings to see if you can watch these, because it's such a fun afternoon, evening, such great entertainment.
Yeah, I mean, there just wasn't a bad piece of work here. There was one that I didn't really care for, but I don't think it was bad work. That was one of the animated ones. But really, what a great value.
What
if you go
treat
to a matinee and pay like $8.
And what a great program. Instead of watching a movie, you get to watch, you know, five short films, each one different than the other. And it's the Oscars, for crying out loud, right? So everybody who has ever had any intentions, any up-and-coming filmmakers, they're going to make short films and they won that prize. So everybody in the world, I think, you know, if they meet the eligibility criteria, are going to apply for it. And so the top five of that lot almost guarantees that it's going to be high quality. It might not match your personal aesthetic or how you're wired, but there you can be assured it has, you know, stellar quality.
Yeah.
So people should look it up. And I think the shorts program plays at least for two or three weekends. And then those shorts are available. I think it's called the Shorts Channel. And it's also available
Shorts
on iTunes.
HD.
Shorts HD,
I think it's a cable channel, but you can also get them on iTunes. And yeah, so great, great value. And really, we'll talk about them when we review the Oscars, but there really wasn't a turkey among them this year. I mean, it was consistently high standard.
Especially the live shorts. I was going to say especially the live shorts. Now I'm thinking about the animations and some of them brought tears to my eyes. They were so good.
Mm-hmm.
Gosh, go out and see them. And I think the documentaries are going to be playing shortly as well.
Yeah. And I'm just going to come out and say it. I think it's very hard to pick between those two. But if you had to, I would go with the live action shorts as well. They're just something else.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I'm just looking at the titles. They're so good.
Yeah.
All right. So
on to our black show.
Indeed.
Black power.
That could be construed as a political statement, Yazdi.
Yes. I stand for
you're now
movies.
Brethren. Yes.
You're now considered on some watch list somewhere there. So we do have three black movies in the title to talk about. We have Black Sea, Black or White, and Black Hat. Let's start with
Black Hat. So set within the world of global cybercrime, Legendary's Black Hat follows a furloughed convict and his American and Chinese partners as they hunt a high-level cybercrime network from Chicago to Los Angeles to Hong Kong to Jakarta. This sounds a bit like Bourne Identity, the cyber version. And this is directed by Michael Mann, which I know you both love. It looks like a long movie, 2 hours and 13 minutes. Wow. And it stars Chris Hemsworth, Viola Davis, Manny Montana, William Mapother, and Tracy Chimo, amongst many others. And Yasin, you were the only one that saw this. Joe, I know you want to see this.
Well, I mean, I wouldn't call myself a huge Michael Mann fan, but, you know, a couple of his movies have been very high up on my esteem list. Including, you know, Collateral, which I thought was fabulous.
Or Heat.
So.
And I'm excited to know, because I saw the reviews and they didn't seem amazing. But then I saw that a fellow reviewer, Glenn Heath.
Yeah.
Of City Beat.
City Beat and Slate Magazine.
And has gone and seen this like 5 or 7 times already.
He has, yes.
Okay, so Yazdi.
So what did you think?
Glenn thinks
should we even see this once?
Glenn thinks it's the best American film of 2015.
Already?
There will be no better one, yes. I pray at the Church of Michael Mann. I mean, it's an event. I wait. You know, he doesn't make too many movies. He seems to make one every 2 or 3 years. And he, you know, he last made the remake of Miami Vice. You know, he made the film version of Miami Vice, which I actually liked a lot. It's amazing. And he kind of continues in this same kind of action thriller with an Asian. There's something about Asia that really turns him on, I think, of late, because this movie has a lot of love for Asia, and it's a cyber thriller at its core. Being a Michael Mann movie, it's very, very tight. It's exceptionally tight. It's beautiful to look at, and it's very, very engaging. It's a very thrilling movie, and it always catches you by surprise. My single biggest issue with the movie was that it gets preposterous very quickly. Not that you expect, you know, these kind of action thrillers to be rooted in reality, but it gets ridiculous very quickly. And then from that point onwards, it just keeps leaping higher and higher into the ridiculous.
Kind of like Lucy?
Maybe not quite as much as Lucy. It's a little bit more earthbound than Lucy, but at some point, it just exists on some other dimension altogether. I mean, I know why people are like huge fans of this movie. I mean, you have to watch the last 20 minutes of this movie just to see it exists on some other alternate parallel dimension altogether. It's so bizarro. It just the scale of it. I don't want to ruin it, but the setting of it happens in a very crowded real life location, and what's going on, it's just the complexity of everything, which is choreographed, and what people are doing is so incomprehensible. It's something else. So to kind of summarize, I think if you don't mind your action thrillers to be ridiculous and preposterous and hard to believe, it's a great ride.
So I loved John Wick.
Mm-hmm.
Right, that was really fun. The recent one with Keanu Reeves, right? It was really fun.
Yeah.
And it was glamorous and it was interesting. And this looks kind of similar.
This has, so, you know, the great thing about John Wick is it has a great sense of humor about
right.
it. At every step, it has a, you know, it's
almost tongue in cheek.
It's
right?
tongue in cheek. It's nudging you. It's having all of these references. It's kind of playing with the genre. There is 0% humor in Black Hat. There's absolutely no humor. It's trying to be a very literal, very angry, very politically upset film about how people are using electronic strength to bring each other down.
Okay.
So, you know, it is cyber thriller. I mean, I know the opening credits are going to turn a lot of people off because it's all zeros and ones. It's all, you know, about things happening and people hacking and doing seemingly impossible things. Like, it's... And this happens in the first 5 minutes of the movie. It's inconceivable for me to believe that somebody somewhere in the world can be so brilliant a cyber hacker that they can remotely detonate a nuclear power plant halfway across the world, which is what happens in the first 5 minutes of the movie.
Right.
So it's that kind of thing. And it is trying to make a commentary on how we live today. And it's kind of... relevant with what happened with the interview.
I was going to say, yeah, that it seems very timely because of the whole North Korea hack.
Right.
And, you know, I'm the nerd amongst us. I read a lot of the tech press. And, you know, it's based on a real premise that cyber warfare is how the next world war will be fought.
Mm-hmm.
You know, the U.S., the NSA and other government agencies actually have cyber attack protocols where, you know, there's like three stages to it. I think Black Hat is, I think, a name for one of these protocols mm-hmm. where, you know, you take advantage of the system, you stay silent, you install software that will prevent you being removed. And then number three, you go for complete and total annihilation of that system. And it's a real protocol. So for me, this whole premise sounds fantastic. I mean, I'm really interested in this kind of stuff, but is it going there or is it completely unhinged? Because, I mean, the real possibility of cyber warfare is, I think, exciting to me.
It is. I think up until the halfway mark, the movie is very serious, and it has, you know, it has a lot to say about, you know, the NSA and how every country in the world actually is trying to get their foot up over everybody else.
Yeah.
And that's the arena now, the person who can break into things better than other. And, you know, watching somebody type something on the screen, especially gibberish code, is not very exciting in itself. So, right. You know, to kind of have...
Speak for yourself.
Yeah, I know. I was going to say, that's a night at home with Joe.
but the movie makes it very, very thrilling up until the halfway point. And then something happens in the movie and it just gets into like crazy thriller territory. Like, I don't know. I guess it's a bit of a spoiler, but I'm going to say it. Like, the bad guy in this movie... at some point just is so bad that, you know, he's doing things, he seems to be doing things just to make a point of it, because if he is as good as we are led to believe, he should make everything shut down in the world like within 5 minutes. Okay, if he can control the things he does,
right,
he should bring everything crashing down. And so it almost seems silly that then he would bother to actually do bodily harm to the people who are working against him.
Right.
So,
and how's Chris Hemsworth? Because I have a problem horrible. With him as an actor. I think he's a really bad actor.
I've spoken with a few people who are ardent admirers of this movie. I actually think he's horribly miscast. There's nothing about him which makes me think that he's the smartest kid in the room. I want somebody nerdy. You know, if he's supposed to be the smartest, you know, hacker ever known in American history in a long time, and he's in prison actually because he got caught doing some stuff, I wouldn't think of Chris Hemsworth. I would think of somebody with very pale, ruddy skin who spends a lot of time not working out, you know, spends a lot of time, you know, not looking good when their shirt is unbuttoned, you know, somebody. But, you know, he also has to run around a lot and save people from distress and so forth. Viola Davis is very good in the movie, but when is she not?
Yeah.
My big disappointment with the movie, other than how preposterous it gets, is, you know, it's very, very routine in terms of the characters. Like, he gets pulled out of jail because he's America's smartest hacker, and, you know, the United States government needs him to fight back this cyber attack that, you know, somebody somewhere in Asia is responsible for. And he connects with his roommate, who also was a very good hacker. And then he promptly falls in love with his roommate's sister. Okay, come on, really? You know, that's that
plotty.
My point is, come on, let her not be your sister. Let her be somebody he runs into on the street. You know, it's just, I don't know, that kind of. I mean, Michael Mann is not one. He's not known for writing very good female characters, anyways. But, you know, that piece doesn't work. The movie is also very gleeful in doing away with major characters. You know, it kind of has no remorse at getting, you know, pretty...
I like that, though. Yeah. I mean, I like that. Celebrity doesn't protect you.
Yeah. And because, you know, there's almost a hierarchy, right? If you know that, you know, Bruce Willis is in a movie and John Malkovich is in a movie, you know, that they won't be the first ones to die, right? That, you know, John Malkovich will die first, and then Bruce Willis will die, and then, you know, I don't know, Dame Helen Mirren will show up. I don't know, whatever. But there is no hierarchy, which adds a nice sense of unease to the movie, because you don't know who's going to be the next
completely
victim.
Yeah,
I do like that, but I feel like when those sorts of movies are playing, that they're written so you don't actually enjoy getting to know the characters. So there's no investment in character because they're going to be gone. So why pay them for, you know, 5 days of work when you can get just the action stuff done in two? I just feel that's the issue, that's the payoff, unfortunately, when there's no... And it's fine in a TV show when you've got, you know, weeks and months to get to know and love the characters. But in a film, I think it just makes it too difficult.
Yeah. I mean, the other thing is the movie is... the best I can tell, maybe has 5 scenes which could have been shot in a studio. Everything else is done, unless they used remarkable CGI, it seems to have been done on location with hundreds and thousands of people on streets. I mean, there are scenes in Jakarta, there are scenes in...
I mean, it's literally like Bourne Identity, right? Mm-hmm. It's that whole feeling of we go to every country in the world.
Yeah.
Is it necessary?
It is, because it adds a real nice flavor to it. Mm. It really adds a nice, because you haven't seen some of these mm-hmm. things. In the second half of the movie, there's some really preposterous things happening. But, you know, they go to this little cave somewhere in South America, and there's a dam there. And
they get cell service or wireless.
Yeah, well, no, they use
satellite. See, that's interesting
to me.
They
use satellite. No, they use satellite. But
I was like, wow, so that's a great network.
So, yes. Great locations. Mm. And, you know, he shoots a lot in the night.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, anybody who's seen Collateral, I mean, the entire movie is shot in the dark in Los Angeles has never looked as good. Maybe not until Nightcrawler, but, you know, he really knows how to shoot in the dark and have you know, things pop up. So it's a bit of a disposable cyber crime thriller, which is very proficiently made.
So give us a
score. I
want to see it too.
I would give it somewhere between a 6 and a 7, a 7 out of 10, to be generous. Yeah. But again, I wish they had picked a better lead actor.
So you liked it as much as Jupiter Ascending?
It's not as gonzo as Jupiter Ascending.
It's another one that's taken a beating in the press, though. Yeah. I mean, it's running 30% on Rotten Tomatoes. And
that's very low.
You know, that score alone is enough to put a lot of people off. But
because at some point people start doing things which are so contrary to logic that you're like, I understand you want to blow things up. I understand you want people to die horrible deaths. But now you're on some kind of, somebody's written a script which is trying too smart. And you're just going through the motions like, oh, I'm going to surprise you. But it's so untethered from reality that it just, you know, you roll your eyes.
Okay.
All right. Movie number two. Should we talk about Black Sea?
Mm-hmm.
So Black Sea is the latest movie from director Kevin MacDonald, who is, I think, one of the more underappreciated directors. I mean, he did The Last King of Scotland. I think that was his, big...
Very good.
Excellent movie. He did State of Play. Did anybody watch that with Russell Crowe? Great film.
I think I did.
He did The Eagle with Channing Tatum. And then last year he did, one of the more underrated movies, a movie starring Saoirse Ronan called How I Live Now. And here he is with Black Sea, which stars Jude Law. And the movie is essentially about a man who gets roped into manning a submarine with the promise of finding untold amounts of gold at the bottom of the ocean left behind by Nazi ships during the Second World War. And he gathers together a ragtag team of individuals who would help him on the submarine, and he sets off under the water. And all manners of crossing and double crossing and triple crossing ensue. The movie, along with Jude Law, co-stars Ben Mendelsohn, who is really great, Scott McNairy, Jodie Whittaker, as well as David Trelfall. We all saw this movie,
yes,
right?
We did, yes.
And Joe, would you recommend that people take a dive into the Black Sea?
You know, if you want to find fault with this movie, you will. It has clearly a couple of... Well, a submarine is a great environment into which to put people and force them to interact. And you can create all these kind of tension. And, you know, there's a hierarchy among the ship. And, you know, we've seen this kind of thing so many times before. But overall, this was actually a very effective movie for me. I mean, I think the sense of claustrophobia and danger was ever present. You know, it's a little bit of a stretch plot-wise for me, and I think, again, examined too carefully, you might find a couple of holes which will irritate you, especially as you leave the movie theater and start thinking about how the movie ended. But nonetheless, you know, I think this was a nicely put together guy movie for guys. I really felt like this was a movie for guys, and I would really have no hesitation in telling people go see this.
Rashmi, would you recommend it?
So the Nazi blood-ridden titles, I think, at the start were a little bit strange, and they felt tonally inconsistent with the rest of the movie. And much as I didn't love the movie, I didn't hate it. I didn't think it was an entire waste of time. It was interesting. We're back in a submarine, and I was trying to think of the submarine movie from last year that we watched with...
With Ed Harris,
and I can't remember the name.
For good reason.
But I didn't think this one offered anything much more new. I thought it was just very meh. Didn't hate it.
Yes, Dee.
So we were talking on our previous podcast about B-movies. I think this is a very good B-movie. And I think it is intentionally made as a B-movie. I think this director really liked The Hunt for Red October. He was clearly influenced by, you know, those James Cameron movies, The Abyss. And James Cameron made a whole bunch of movies set deep into the ocean. Mm. And this is his homage to it. I mean, like you said, you know, inherently the submarine creates this claustrophobic pressure cooker kind of environment where you literally have nowhere to go. You're miles under the surface of the sea and, you know, nobody can hear you. And in this movie, very conveniently, you know, the radio is destroyed. So they lose contact with everybody else. And then it builds in this almost Lord of the Flies kind of, you know, all the humans become savages because there's no law. So I think he's playing by those conventions, and I think he plays reasonably well by it. I don't think he ever intends to transcend the genre, and that's the issue. I wish he had tried something. Let me take this, you know, submarine thriller movie and turn it on its back. He has no interest in turning it on its back. He just wants to do his version of a really good Hunt for Red October kind of movie that he probably grew up with when he was a child.
Yeah, I mean, I'm probably the one that didn't enjoy it as much as you both. I mean, but what I did love was the weathered, non-vain looking Jude Law, who's doing really, really good character work.
With a slightly suspect Scottish accent.
Correct.
What is with the accents?
Yeah, I think maybe they wanted Jason Statham, not Jason Statham.
Yeah, no, it could be a Jason Statham
or
role.
Sean Connery.
Yeah, kind of like a Ewan McGregor. I think
would have been so good in
exactly.
this.
But I think Jude Law did a really good job. I think the problem I had was it was a very plotty movie, and so I didn't quite connect with all of the characters. I did like that no one was safe. You know how we were talking in the last review about no one's safe. I did like that, but like I said, I think the payoff then is that you don't get to know the characters as well.
I mean, I think plotty. I wouldn't quite call it plotty, but I do think that there were some elements that were very forced and kind of unbelievable. It was, you know, they were trying to build in twists to the story.
Right.
To kind of raise the stakes continually. Right. But it was a little problematic for me in that I couldn't always buy the motives of the people involved.
Right.
Like they behaved in certain ways that I thought was a little inconsistent with their circumstances.
Yeah.
And, you know, kind of like when we reviewed The Boy Next Door, you have these kind of shifts in a character's behaviors that come very, very suddenly.
Within a scene, yeah.
This movie has that problem too. And I don't know whether that's because, you know, something got cut from the script or something, you know, didn't come out when they shot and they said they couldn't put it in there. But every now and then you'll have this jarring shift in a character's behaviors. And I'm like, oh, okay, but it's fine, but because it kind of works, and you can understand the environment in which they're in might yield people to behave irrationally.
Yeah, and I just think, you know, the Russian characters are so cliche. I mean, it's, you know.
But I'm nitpicking, because actually, I mean, in the moment, I really was having fun with this film.
I mean, to be fair, the characters do kind of turn on a dime to reveal their characteristics, should we say. But then once that's revealed, they kind of stay, they maintain allegiance to the rest of the book.
Correct, yeah.
So it's not true. Like somebody's suddenly good-hearted one minute and then turns into the villain the next minute.
But it's predictable in some places.
I know, but I think taking those little pieces, I think what it makes out of it is pretty good. Like there is a great scene, I think, where, you know, these two individuals head out of the submarine to find the gold, and then there's this cliff off of which they can fall off, and there's wires hanging, and the wire of course is going to come unhinged and somebody's going to fall off, and these are the conventions of suspense movies since the start of cinema.
Right.
And considering that how tightly that whole scene is done, it really generates very effective tension.
I know, I just kept thinking which one of them is going to die.
And there's right? a hierarchy, I mean, there, right?
Right.
But you could have almost guessed how, yeah. Yeah.
So.
And I, you know, I'm no fan of like Frumpy Jude Law. I just wanted him to crack a smile once in a while.
Oh no, I like Frumpy Jude Law. I really liked him.
Frumpy Jude Law was so like dragged down by the weight of the world. It was like Liam Neeson in every movie.
So, and then the other thing I had.
I liked his performance here. Sorry to interrupt. Yeah, I mean, no, I think it was very. It was
sincere.
Nice.
It
was nice to see him like that. And I think in so many ways that that characterization carried the movie because I mean I believed in what he was doing above everyone else. I mean, everyone else seemed to have these, you know, ulterior motives here and there. And I just think that he had his motives sorted out from the get-go. And, you know, we were all clear about what he wanted from day one. And that was a lovely, you know, that was a lovely mechanic to kind of push us through that narrative.
Yeah. I mean, I think the other issue I had is that there were some really good moments of tension. Even though some of them were predictable, one of those was the one you talked about, Yazdi. But given it's 2 hours in length, I still don't feel like I got a whole movie. I still feel like I'm waiting for dessert. It feels like an unfinished meal to me.
Oh, no.
I hated the ending. Okay. I really hated the ending. Really hated the ending. But no, I didn't. I had my fill.
Did you see? Because I figured like we took so long to get there and then it came and went.
Because of how they chose to end the movie, I think that's why you were dissatisfied. Right. I'm horribly dissatisfied with it. I hated when movies do that, and this movie did that.
Right.
We can't talk about it because they're all spoilers.
Yeah, I mean, I can see why you reacted that way. I think any other way of ending the movie would have really been too Hollywood, and I think he was trying really hard to not.
No,
there
could have been a really good twist.
You could have been clever.
That could have been a really smart twist, I think.
Yeah, let's not talk about it anymore because it's frustrating to listen to if we can't.
And then
do spoilers.
There's this kid who he brings along for you know on this submarine trip, and of course the kid represents all that's pure and innocent, and all these horrible other evil characters are on it. And of course it's the kid who gets hurt, and you know so the movie does kind of play by those conventions, but again. The person who made The Last King of Scotland and the person who made, you know, State of Play, I think he's deliberately doing this. He knows he's making, he wants to give you what you expect from this kind of a movie.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. And the suspense really works. One other thing on his CV is Touching the Void. Mm-hmm. And if you haven't seen that, the mountaineering disaster movie, I mean, this is somebody who really understands how to create anxiety and suspense in situations. And I think this movie, Black Sea, did that very well.
Yeah. Okay.
The other thing I noticed is the music here is really loud. I mean, it actually clangs. At one point, it was clang, clang, clang.
Yeah, I think
it was such a cliche. It was actually clanging. It was like somebody was standing with a pan going clang, 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 clang. But anyway, I mean, it's part of the course. You know, if you're saying,
well, you are in an old submarine.
Yeah.
Okay, let's score this one. Yazdi.
Surprisingly effective thriller, very well made, playing by the conventions of the genre. I had a major problem with the ending, and that's why I'm not giving it an 8 out of 10. I'll give it a 7 out of 10. Joe. It would have been an easy 8.
Wow. Joe.
Yeah, another 7 for me. You know, this movie isn't perfect, and I think, you know, it has its twists and turns as it goes along and as you kind of expect it to. But, you know, overall, I think Jude Law, you know, carried it for me. I think he was rock solid from start to finish. And as far as, you know, marine disaster suspense type movies go, this is a good one. So 7 out of 10.
The story is leaky and doesn't go deep enough for me. So I'm going to give it a 5 out of 10. I think it was just really average.
It's a guy movie.
New for me.
This is a guy movie. This is totally. I mean, number one, there's no real female characters in here at all. Are there any female characters?
The ex-wife.
Well, there's
she pops in and out of flashbacks.
4 scenes, yeah.
Yeah, but this is a guy's movie.
I mean, I thought it created claustrophobia really well, and I felt like I was in a submarine, and blah blah blah. You know.
Yeah.
You know, honestly, forget the Koreans. I'm surprised the Russians haven't attacked Hollywood or thrown a bomb on us. I mean, movie after movie, we really stereotype the Russians.
And that cliche cook was making me laugh.
If it's not the Russian mafia, then it's like these horrible Russian characters. Even in Jupiter Ascending, you know, oh, such stereotypes of Russians.
I'm sure they do the same to us. All right. Our third black movie of the week is Black or White. Black or White is a story of a grandfather who is suddenly left to care for his beloved granddaughter when her paternal grandmother seeks custody with the help of her brother. The little girl is torn between two families who love her deeply. The movie stars Kevin Costner, Octavia Spencer. It's directed by Mike Binder. And it's great to see Kevin Costner back working. He's working hard this year, right? He's
right, two films in 1 month.
He's in McFarland, USA, which comes out soon. We haven't reviewed that. But also this movie here, Black or White. So.
And he was last year in 3 Days to Kill and in the very, very grossly underrated movie Draft Day, which people should really seek out on DVD.
Draft Day.
If they get a chance, especially if you love baseball. I don't, and I still love the movie.
So Rashmi and I weren't able to make the screening for this one again. But so Yazdi, you're the only one. You're
going to count. Alas, I was working.
We're going to count on you to tell us whether or not to see this one.
So this is Mike Binder, who a few years ago made a lovely, lovely movie called The Upside of Anger with Joan Allen and Kevin Costner. This was in 2005, and I own the DVD for that movie because I was one of the, I saw the movie in the theater and it just affected me so much. I purchased the DVD and I've watched it many times since. And after having watched Black or White, I can understand why. There is something about this director which just works for my affinity. Black or White is a horrible film. It's not, nobody's going to rush out and call it a classic anytime soon. I think the problem lies with the script. This had the makings of, being a really amazing film, which would have a lot to say about, about ethnicity, and especially in this country, and especially in the contemporary times with Ferguson and what's going on right now. But I think, what is this filmmaker's fault is also his advantage in that he likes to make movies that have a gentleness. There's a resolute gentleness about the whole movie. And, the music score and the pacing, how it takes its time building characters, it doesn't let any of the heavy emotional, it doesn't linger. Somebody dies in the movie and people are crying, but it doesn't linger on them crying forever. There's the way the whole movie is constructed, it has a gentleness about it. The movie doesn't work as a whole. It's essentially leading up to a courtroom drama where, this kid who comes from a mixed marriage between, a white woman and a black guy, after her grandmother dies, her other grandmother claims that she wants to keep her, essentially adopt her, because her grandfather is an alcoholic, which is played by Kevin Costner. And she says, an alcoholic should not be taking care of a little girl. And it comes to a courtroom drama, and that piece is written reasonably well. And again, there are some speeches, or there are some monologues in there, which is the director talking about how he feels about race. And apparently he himself has been in this situation. He somebody in his family, I think his daughter or somebody, is married to someone who's black, and there have been some issues. But set that aside, I don't think this movie is going to win a lot of fans because it's too laid back, I think, to make a very strong point about ethnicity. But it's just...
So is it a lost opportunity?
I mean...
It is, because
that's
why
I always get upset, where a movie has the opportunity to really take a stand on something it shies away from it.
Just looking at the trailer, it seems potentially toothless. And is that the
toothless
issue with the movie?
Yeah, it is toothless. And I don't think it's toothless because it doesn't have anything to say, or that it can't get out there. I think it's not this filmmaker's intent to jump up and down, and beat up a lather about this issue. His point is to be kind of watched from afar and kind of say, this is what's going on. And I think the movie almost works. It comes to the point of almost working several times, but it doesn't really quite work. But the times that it does work, it works because of the amazing acting. And, God, Kevin Costner deserves a better career. I mean, he needs a better agent, something, because he's so good here, and he's He's so believable, and he never once screams. He never yells. There are some developments late in the movie which should have never been in this movie. It's like, you know, and yet he kind of is a sport and he goes along with it. Octavia Spencer is Octavia Spencer. She's the, you know, the...
Yeah, we can all picture it.
You know, she's like, no nonsense. I'm not going to take flack from anybody, but she still has a good heart. But I think the other surprise in the movie is the actor who plays the granddaughter. I mean, she is just such a natural screen presence, beautiful to look at, and you genuinely believe that she loves her grandfather. The bond between her and her grandfather, played by Kevin Costner, is so good. I really wish this movie was so much better than it is.
Score?
I mean, I don't know. What do you make of a gentle film with its heart in the right place that doesn't ultimately work? I think
straight to Netflix.
No, I think I'll take
back
it.
Back of a movie.
No,
back of an airplane.
I'll take it. I'll take it, warts and all. I like this movie. 7 out of 10.
Wow.
Yeah, I really, and I think for most people it'll be a 5 or a 6. Octavia Spencer has some great scenes, you know, where she, you know, she yells. And I think I have my top films from 2014 are Sherman, Mr. Sherman and
Peabody.
Mr. Peabody and Sherman.
Is in my top.
How did that not get a nomination?
I know.
Sorry.
How did it not get a best animated movie nomination? But Mr. Peabody and Sherman is on it. And then Like Father, Like Son, which is this Japanese movie, is also on my top 10. And the reason why those movies are on my top 10 is because they have something to say about family. That ultimate, and it's going to sound cliche even as I say it, that ultimately family is defined by behavior, and it's not defined by genetics. It's not defined by, you know, where you were born or who you hang out with. It is defined by people who behave like family. And I think this movie ultimately makes that point. And for that alone, it, you know, it wins points from me. I wish the script comes off feeling like a draft. I wish somebody had sat with it and just glistened the life out of it and made it tighter and more
edgy.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, that was my big fear. In looking at the trailer and looking at the way that it was even promoted, I was just so concerned that they were going to go the Disney route and maybe not tackle the issues in the way that they perhaps need to be. Even though in some ways that would have been a cliche movie too. So, yeah.
I mean, it does do something very interesting in that Octavia Spencer is the grandmother who is actually, you know, she lives in this huge home with, you know, with cousins and brothers and sisters and their kids, and her home is always a mess. People are singing, people are crying, it's just like a hub of activity. And she herself is a self-made woman. She's having 3 or 4 businesses run at the same time. But she has a brother played by Anthony Mackie, who is a great actor. And, you know, it's great that the script makes Anthony Mackie one of the greatest lawyers in Los Angeles, who she hires her brother to defend, you know, to get her granddaughter back.
Mm-hmm.
And so it's totally not stereotyping, you know, the black person as somebody underprivileged or unaccomplished. You know, he's shown as somebody who's very powerful. He's the head of his own law firm. And at the same time, the movie is still showing that her son, who is the father of this little girl, is a crack addict. And he's trying to be better and he's really making an effort. And, you know, at one point somebody says in the movie, you're a stereotype. Stop doing this. Stop being a black stereotype. And it's great that this little gentle movie is saying that there is a reason why the stereotype exists and people are trying not to be there. Everybody's struggling with how do you deal with this person, you know, who is caught in this little loop. So it has a few things to say.
I think I would like to see it.
Yeah, definitely catch it.
Did it make you cry? Was it schmaltzy?
It didn't quite make me cry, but it gave me the good, it gave me a little glow.
Okay. And please tell me there's no love affair between...
No.
Okay,
Octavia Spencer.
Yeah, I hate that.
No, no,
that would be just loathsome.
No, thankfully there
Okay,
isn't.
Good.
Yeah.
Okay, stay tuned to Movie Wallahs. We're going to do an Oscars reaction show, hopefully in a not too distant future. So look forward to doing that. And we'll try and do that well ahead of the Academy Awards, which are when this year?
26th of February, late February, 24th.
So, yes, we have lots of opinions there.
Yes.
And if you actually want to get some of how Yazdi feels, head over to movieworldlost.com for what I'm going to describe as a rant, Yazdi.
I'm angry, damn it. Boo to Waters. Shame on you. Do your effing job.
So, yeah, if you want a quick preview of how Yazdi feels about the Oscars, definitely head over to our main website. And also, Yazdi, is it on your personal website, spacesinmymind.blogspot.com? So either of those two sites for that. Until our next episode, it's Too Many Movies. Too Many Movies. Too Little Time. A good night from me.
And me.
And me as well.